Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. Appreciate you spending some time with us. We've rescheduled our interview with Sheriff Mark Lamb from Pinal County, talking about the Supreme Court ruling that allows the Biden administration to end the Remain in Mexico policy if it chooses to. We're going to talk with him at 11:35. We will do that after the bottom of the hour news. There was another Supreme Court decision on the EPA and what their restrictions can be. You just heard Jeff talking about it in the news. I want you to hear a little bit more about this. This is an ABC News report about this ruling, and then we'll talk about what its effect might be.
This is devastating to climate advocates, especially the Biden administration, who had made the climate agenda a centerpiece of this White House. They want to roll back emissions in this country, a leading driver of global climate change. And this is a huge win for the coal industry and those communities that support it. I spent a lot of time ahead of this case in Appalachia, coincidentally one of the communities hardest hit by the impacts of climate change. But they're very resistant to these sorts of regulations. 1.7 million jobs in that industry and related industries.
So the results of this, I want you to hear, I've talked about intent, and I probably don't want to go down that road too much and repeat myself, but Gina McCarthy is an advisor, a climate advisor to the Biden administration, and she was doing an interview this week, and she was bragging. She's actually bragging about how there have been so many fossil fuel jobs that have been lost. All right.
We have opportunities now to transfer to clean energy in a way that grows thousands of jobs. Mm-hmm. We just had a recent report that was put out that's showing all of the energy and the employment stats from last year. Clean energy is winning. Fossil fuels losing jobs. We're gaining them every step of the way.
So let me just read the effect of this now before I'm going down the road of the intentionality of what they're doing. Let me just go down the road of what's happening. The energy policies of this administration are what I believe led the way in this country on inflation. Without a doubt, the increase and the dramatic increase in gas prices that went on and on and on for the first year of this presidency, it was what directly led to inflation in so many other areas, in my opinion. So let me just read a few headlines. Economic confidence crashes. 85% of Americans say the economy is getting worse. More than half of all U.S. consumers live paycheck to paycheck. Grocery cart inflation jumps to the highest in 22 years. Fed's preferred inflation measure rose 4.7% in May, around a multi-decade high. Plurality say they are worse off financially than they were 1 year ago. The U.S. GDP, gross domestic product, early 2022 dip was bigger than previously thought. Those are the results of the policies on energy, and that is the ripple effect that we are feeling now. I talked about how it's impossible to pull off in the time frame this administration wants to pull off the things that it wants to pull off. The American people, and you think about some of the advances we've had in the world, just in my lifetime, let's talk about the telephone. I remember the telephone where you had to have an operator connect your call. My grandparents had a party line. Now, that means a whole different thing in the 21st century. But a party line used to be you were connected to your neighbor's phone line. And you would pick up the phone and your neighbor would be on the phone. And you would, as if you were polite, you'd hang up and let them finish their phone call before you made a phone call. But houses shared a phone line for a while. The rotary dial phone, then the phone cord that was 18 feet long. Then we got cordless phones in our house. Then we had cell phones in our car that were mounted in the car. Then we had bag phones. Then we got flip phones. We had Blackberries. Now we've got smartphones. That technology, because people demanded it and the technological advances were there, they happened because the people wanted them. If the American people and the people around the world want electric vehicles, they'll make them. And they are making them. And there are great vehicles. There are great electric vehicles. But the idea that you are going to force this on the American people by diminishing their ability to get fossil fuels, and that's exactly what's happening, making fossil fuels so expensive. And then they brag about this huge uptick in electric vehicles. the jury's out on the overall environmental impact on this anyway. I don't want to get into it because I don't have all the details. But let's say it's as good for the environment as they say it's going to be. That the products used to make the batteries that have to be mined are not going to damage the earth. And when the batteries go bad, the storage and where they're going to be in landfills is not going to damage. Let's say all that's true. How do you get there? And it's going to take decades to get there. And instead of it being on equal footing that as we diminish the need for fossil fuels, we will reduce the fossil fuel production. It's not what we've done. What we've done is taken away the Americans' possibility, the American people's possibility of leading the world on energy production in the sense that we could be self-sufficient. That is a powerful tool. When you have the most powerful economy on the planet, and you are telling the world, we don't need your oil. We can make our own oil. We have the ability to pull it out of the ground whenever we need to, as much as we need to. That sends a big message to the rest of the world that we have a really good seat at the table when it's negotiating and it's time to talk about how much oil we're going to produce for the world and what oil prices are going to be. When you come out with policies that are very, very restrictive, and there are more on the way, they are looking at going after the largest oil field in America that is responsible for 40% of the oil production. 95 million gallons of gasoline per day comes out of this field, and they are looking at EPA restrictions and regulations against that field at a time when we are setting we have been setting records for gas prices. So they're not stopping with their policies. What they are doing is reducing the ability for these companies to do what they've been doing. The president of the United States says that it's Russia's fault. They also, what they've been doing, what I found to be very interesting, is that they're saying that they want to go to Russia and tell the entire world, get together and tell them this is how much we'll pay for oil from you and not a penny more. It's the way of thinking about this is just foolish. If those countries stop selling oil, what would happen if the OPEC nation said, oh, you want to tell us what you're going to pay for oil? No, no, no. Here's the price for a barrel of oil. And the United States says and our European allies say, we're not going to pay that. What happens if they say, okay, we're not going to send you any. What does that do to our gas prices? And what does that do to our supply chain issues? Instead of putting the American companies back to work and allowing them and unleashing the power of the American economy, and even if you want to go back to your policies later, instead of doing that and giving them a timeline where they can, you know, make a profit instead of costing billions of dollars in the short term to do something when you've told them you're going to shut them down. That is not good business. Coming up in a moment, we do it every day at 11:20. It's called Did You Hear This? We get you caught up on the big headlines and the biggest news stories. It happens next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
All right, another busy news day. Let's get you caught up. Did you hear this?
Did you hear this? Broomhead's reaction to the hottest news stories.
Yeah, big story today, Mike. The U.S. Supreme Court siding with President Biden in his decision earlier this year to end Remain in Mexico. Cochise County Sheriff Mark Daniels told Arizona's Morning News he respects the high court's decision.
Well, we look at the reality of our community down here in this country, and you look at what's happened since October 1 of 2021 to current time. 1.6 million encounters, 7,500 to 8,000 a day encounters, 500 plus deaths on the southwest border. Hmm. Tell me that's not humanitarian on the American side here.
So do you think this, if they decide to end it, because they could choose not to, I guess, but if they decide to end it, could this lead to states like Texas and Arizona putting together what many might consider to be excessive laws to protect the border?
There's not much that we can do to protect the border. That's a federal issue. But what we can do is we can help local law enforcement. We can do things in border towns as people cross the border. We can charge them with crimes that are local crimes. But it's going to cost us in law enforcement. It's going to cost us in the courtrooms. It's going to cost us in the jails. It's going to going to cost us everywhere. So we can do certain things, but it's going to be very expensive. What we need are pieces of legislation through the Congress that enforce existing border laws. And that's what we need. What the courts did here was say the president has the right to make these decisions. Remember that when you elect the president. That is what this is all about. I'm sorry that it's happening here in Arizona, in the state that I love so much, and it's going to happen in Texas. But the country's going to pay a big price for this, and I think there's going to be a backlash at the ballot box.
Maybe some shades of the Republican presidential debates in 2015 and 16 last night here in Arizona in the debate for governor. Here's just a small sampling of what went on between the four candidates on the stage.
I feel like I'm on an SNL skit here. Are we going to take control of the debate?
We are taking, no, Carrie, I don't want
I'm
you to
I'm happy to do it.
I know you would be happy to do it.
Now, Mike, I know you watched the debate. Was there a winner, or were they all losers in this? What do you think?
I don't think there was a clear-cut winner. I'll be honest with you. There was too much arguing and talking over each other that went on. I was disappointed that there weren't longer answers allowed without interruption, and this goes to all four candidates, because I think in order for us to make a wise decision, we have to understand what the nuances are and the differences in policy. And when you're yelling and talking over each other, forget the insults, it just gets contentious. I don't care about that. But no one was really able to make clear points and longer points that showed the difference between their policy and another person's policy. And when people have to make a decision, and that's the forum they're using, it's just it didn't give the people what they needed to hear. So I don't think there was a winner, because I don't think enough people had got to hear enough about what each candidate stood for. So really, I didn't see a clear-cut winner. You are listening to Did You Hear This? Every day we do this just to get you caught up on the headlines.
And a little earlier this morning, you and Democrat Secretary of State candidate Adrian Fontes had a spirited conversation about anger over election results and court decisions.
Well, we're on the verge of not ever having free and fair elections again if the folks who are continuing to perpetuate the big lie win. So we can't afford to have those types of people who don't have faith in the American public, who don't have faith in the Republicans and Democrats and independents. And libertarians who ran our elections.
All right, in fairness, within the last week, Hillary Clinton has said we will never know the truth about 2016. So it's both sides of the aisle that have people that doubt our elections at times.
And then he brought up a counterpoint to that, Mike. My question is there any chance at all that at least one result in these elections this year will not be challenged?
No, I think we're going to see challenges. And it happens from both sides of the aisle. By the way, I had a conversation via text with Mr. Fontes. We were kind of letting each other know we appreciated the spirited debate. But my problem is, I don't know that you're going to be able to solve the voter integrity question as long as we keep shouting at each other. Both sides of the aisle have their doubts about election integrity. In 2016, it was a stolen election and Russian collusion, and the Russians stole the election. And in 2020, it was 2,000 mules. And so there's doubts on both sides. What is being done to restore the confidence in the free and fair election? We got to show them exactly what's being done, and then there are going to be people that don't believe it. But we've got to do whatever is necessary to make it easy to vote and hard to cheat. That should be everybody's goal.
All right, and this last story is from sports, and it's a breaking story. There is a Pac-12 reporter out there who's saying that USC and UCLA are planning to leave for the Big Ten as early as 2024. Now, that would impact us here because of ASU and U of A being in the Pac-12. Mike, you're a big sports fan. If this winds up happening, is there any positive spin to put on this from Pac-12 schools?
No. Well, here's the thing. I think people are college football fans. I don't know how many people are league fans. I mean, there's SEC fans and there's Big Ten fans, but it's because of the teams in those conferences. I think this is all going to be a bigger part leading toward a playoff that happened with the big conference champions, kind of like we have division champions in the NFL. If those two schools were to go to the Big Ten and it weakened the Pac-12, who knows? Maybe the Pac-12 and the remaining teams, maybe they join another conference and join forces with another conference that's got some diminished capacity, and we end up with super conferences. I will tell you, as a fan, whatever gives me the most competitive games, I want to watch. When I can watch my Miami Hurricanes compete against world-class talent and feel like they can compete, then I'm a happy person. And I think in college sports, that is more important than anything else. But I'm anxious to see what direction this goes. All right, that's Did You Hear This? That is a big story, and I am a big sports fan. And if those two teams, which are powerhouse teams with a lot of television viewers and a lot of national support, go to a different conference, that is going to be huge, especially because the styles of football are so different and in the conferences. And I think that it's going to be something that just draws even more attention. I love college football, and I'll be interested. I would be really interested to see them join that conference and see what happens. Coming up in a few moments, we've been trying to get this worked out all day, and I appreciate the sheriff's willingness to try to work with us. We've been trying to get Sheriff Lamb on from Pinal County. We understand that it isn't a border county technically, but it borders the tribal land that straddles the border, and there is a lot of action of human smuggling and drug smuggling that happens in Pinal County. So we are going to get his reaction, Sheriff Lamb's reaction to the Supreme Court decision and what he believes will happen in his county as a result. We'll talk about it in just a moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Supreme Court decision announced today that allows the president to end the Remain in Mexico policy. It wasn't a saying the law or the rules were good or bad. It was just that the president has the right to change them if he chooses. The assumption is they will continue to move forward and do just that. We heard from Sheriff Daniels on Arizona's Morning News, and now we talk with the sheriff of Pinal County, Sheriff Lamb. Sheriff, we appreciate you joining us. I know that you're very busy, so I'll only take up a little of your time. Let's talk about this ruling. What will this do to Pinal County?
Oh, it's going to make a really bad problem even worse. You know, these guys have completely failed the American people on the border stuff. And this was one of the policies. Look, I'll say this, but then I'll also follow it up with something else. This is one of the policies that needed to be in effect so that we can deal with some of these folks claiming asylum. There's so many showing up, and then they're not following the protocols. Well, I also agree that, you know, it's not in the Constitution anywhere, and that's really what the Supreme Court's job is to decide whether this is in the Constitution and give a ruling as it relates to that.
You and I had talked, the last time we talked, there was a story out of your county about a 15-year-old that was in a chase with your deputies, and it ended up that he ended up telling people that he's done this, he'd been caught four times and never prosecuted, never run through the system, and we found out from Brandon Judd that the reason for that is the DOJ isn't prosecuting these kids in these cases. Do you believe you're going to see an uptick in minors being used in this capacity? Are we going to see an uptick in drugs? What are we going to see arise in as a result of this?
Well, I think to preface your question, first and foremost, it's already out of control. So when you're talking uptick, you're basically saying, hey, is it going to go from, you know, being a race car in the red to even more red? And that's really what it is. It's a mess right now. And if we remove this, it's only going to get worse. It's going to only get worse. And so we have to do something. I mean, if this administration is going to continue to just not enforce any policies, and now we're going to lose the Remain in Mexico and other things, this is only going to just it's only going to invite more young people to get involved in this type of behavior.
And the other thing we talked about last time was the treacherous journey that this is and the amount of first aid that your deputies have to render. We are going to see deaths go up.
No question. I saw something the other day in an article, and I haven't confirmed it, but the article said that there was over 14,000 search and rescue missions conducted by the Border Patrol already. I know we spend the majority of our time in our summer saving people that the cartels have left behind or left for dead in the deserts, whether they were hurt or lost or injured, you know, whatever it is. We're then tasked with going and finding these people and saving them. And this is only going to increase as well. I mean, it's just, we're all tasked to the max right now.
Sheriff Daniels told Arizona's Morning News that this is the first administration that doesn't work with border sheriffs at all, doesn't work with them at on any level. Is that the same with you in Pinal County?
Yeah, I mean, we have a good working relationship with the line level troops of the Border Patrol, but we don't have the same relationship with the administration. The administration basically abandoned us. Once they took office, we never heard from them again.
So what's the answer? I mean, you are going to be dealing with this problem. We are talking about what's coming, but what is your agency prepared to do? Do you have the manpower? Are you prepared to handle this? What should the people in your county expect?
I don't know how you can be prepared to handle 10,000 people crossing the border every day, which are the current numbers, more or less. You're between about 7 and 10,000 people. It's only going to get worse. And I don't know. I mean, who can handle that? We're certainly not equipped for it. Border Patrol's not equipped for it. They're spending all their time doing babysitting at this point.
Yeah, and you said that you have a great working relationship with the field level people from the federal government, the border, whether it's Border Patrol or ICE. What are they saying? Do you have conversations with the boots on the ground? What are they saying about leadership in these rules?
You know, they don't say much. These guys are professionals, and I respect that about them. On the down low, they're not happy. They're not happy with this administration, you know, but they're troopers. They're just going to continue to show up, do their job, have a good attitude, and I can appreciate that. But there's some frustration there, but for the most part, these guys are pros, and they go out and do their job.
Will this change your approach to how many people you are going to put, at the southern part of your county, or are you just don't have the equipment and the ability to do that?
You know, Mike, I wish I could tell the people that I had more equipment to apply to it, but I just don't. Like, I probably won't be able to change much of what I'm currently doing. I'm helping as much as I can with my aviation unit, with my canines or full-time interdictors on the highways. I'm using them as much as I can, and we're trying to do the best we can. I just cannot. My responsibility is still to my county, and I have to make sure that we're responding to those calls and giving people the best service we can, and we do what we can to help Border Patrol and our federal partners achieve their mission when they want help. Unfortunately, you know, Washington, D.C. and this administration under Biden, they don't want our help.
Sheriff, I always appreciate the time. I can hear the frustration in your voice. I appreciate you talking with us, and I hope you'll come back on as this moves forward and give us an update on what those numbers really look like.
My pleasure, and thank you for talking about it, bringing it to light, and obviously educating your listeners on what the reality of this crazy crap we're dealing with is.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you again. That is Sheriff Mark Lamb from Pinal County, Arizona. Frustration from the border sheriffs, and technically not a border sheriff in that sense, which we've talked about before, but because they border tribal land that straddles the southern border of the United States, there is a lot of traffic through Pinal County. They are dealing with this on a daily basis. We've had updates about Yuma, and we talked with one of their supervisors weeks ago about the uptick in people that are crossing in Yuma. The people that are crossing in Yuma County and in Yuma are people that are from all over the world. They said they were from Chechnya. They had people that from Russia. They had people from Ukraine. They had people crossing, not just people from, you know, from Mexico or Central America. We have seen it does strain the resources that are meant for the citizens there. The other part of this is the humanity of it, the human life part of this. It's never lost on me. It's never lost on any of us that what is happening is the cartels are using and abusing the people that they are bringing across. These are not people that are dealing with honesty. They're dealing with criminals. They are dealing with deadly criminals. And more and more lives are going to be lost because of this. It is not a humane way to treat people. We have to give an update, and it's a sad anniversary here in the state of Arizona. The country mourned with us the Yarnell Hill fire. We have an update, and we're going to talk about that anniversary coming up here in just a couple of moments.
Values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, I want to invite you to download the podcast. If you haven't subscribed to the Mike Broomhead Show podcast, you can do it. It's very simple to do on any device that you have. Listen at your convenience. Never miss a minute of the show. And I want to thank the sponsors this week of the Mike Broomhead Show podcast. It is King LASIK and K2 Vision RLE, the best vision for the valley. They have solutions for any stage of life. Schedule your free virtual consult at kingk2vision.com. Men at Work. Gotta love it. I remember so vividly what happened on June 30th of 2013. I was living in the Northwest Valley, living in about I-17 and way north, almost up to the up to Carefree Highway, Joe Max in that area. And this horrible news came out that 19 members of the Granite Mountain Hotshots were killed and overrun in a fire. And any of all of us that live in Arizona understand how fast wildfires move. And it was such a devastating loss of so many people in one day. And I remember talking with my friends at the 100 Club here in Arizona and talking with them about the strain it would put on them financially because of how much money they give to families. And they weren't even thinking about the financial part of it. They were as devastated as anyone else was at the loss of life all in one incident here in Arizona. It was devastating. And I remember as they brought the bodies of those firefighters down to the valley to the Maricopa County Medical Examiner's Office. And then there was a procession of funeral cars up the I-17 north back to return them home for their funerals and their burial. And I was a group of thousands of people that were lining the overpasses of the I-17 in respect of the loss of life and the sacrifice that these people made. The conversation was taught. We talked about wildfires and what a tragic death it was. And there were some things that came out of that, things that happened there that I thought were remarkable. And one of them was a conversation I had with Glenn Beck. Glenn and I go back years and are friends, and he's been very kind to me. You know, we're so different in style and different things, but we got along so well. And I always respected him because he's such a kind man. And his organization reached out to me and asked me if I would write a piece for their website. And I did, and took pictures, and it was posted on their website. And what a tragedy it was. And so he asked me to come on and talk about it and describe what happened and some of the things that were happening. And none of what I'm saying, I don't mean any of this in disrespect, but the firefighters call it the baked potato. It is the last line of defense when you're going to be overrun by fire. And the expectation is if you survive, you will be severely burned, but you wrap yourself in what looks like tinfoil. And they called it the baked potato because, and these are the firefighters saying this, and I was describing this to his audience, and they were said the same thing. We don't want to be disrespectful, but that's what it looked like, and that's why they call it that. You literally are wrapping yourself up in this fire retardant, but not fireproof, and it's supposed to repel some of the burn. And it would, even that didn't stop it, and it didn't save any lives. But we talked about all of those things, and I asked them if they would mention the 100 Club of Arizona because, you know, writing that many, 19 checks is a lot of money from that organization. And would they, you know, ask for donations of their audience? And he did. They put a button on their website. And then Glenn's charity wrote a check for $50,000 to help replenish some of the funds. And so for me, the remarkable memory was the kindness and the love of everybody kind of coming together. I think maybe because I am involved in such a contentious business, and I love it. I love the debate we have politically. I love talking about my opinions and talking with people that disagree. I love what I do. But there is a time when you can take a deep breath and you are somewhere where, whether it's a time of great sadness or great joy, you are standing with people and you don't know, nor do you care, what their political leanings are. And that was one of those times. It reaffirms my love for the people of Arizona. It was a blazing hot June day when those funeral cars were going north, and you had people standing for hours, some of them, you know, for well over an hour, waiting for that procession to make its way north, just to show respect to the loss of life and the sacrifice of these firefighters. And it was such a solemn and somber moment, but it was a moment of true unity in the sadness that we all felt. And this was felt all over the country. I believe it was the largest loss of life in one incident since 9/11 when it comes to first responders. If I'm not mistaken, that's the case, and it still holds to be the same case. And it is something that I don't think I'll ever forget. And the realization is those cars drove past us as I was standing at, I was at the overpass of Jomax and I-17. I'll never forget that, how quiet it was. It almost was like you couldn't hear the cars themselves because you were just so focused on when each car drove by that there was the body of a hero inside and someone that had, you know, taken an oath or decided that it was their duty to fight fires and protect property and protect human life at the risk of their own, knowing that any time they went into one of those fires, that there was a chance that they might not come out unscathed or they might not come out alive. And unfortunately, that day, all of those firefighters lost their lives, all 19 of them. And it's a day that we won't forget because of the sheer sacrifice. And what adds to this for me, what adds to the respect I have for all first responders, and I talk so much about law enforcement, and I never mean to only talk about law enforcement at the sacrifice of firefighters, is that just like police officers, when an officer is killed in the line of duty, or officers, there's never a call for service that goes unanswered. There were firefighters that continued to fight that fire, and they continued to make sure that property was saved as much as possible and is keeping the loss of acreage to a minimum in our forests and protect the safety of the homes and buildings around where this fire was burning. And they never stopped. When I, you know, when you lose somebody close to you, your life can stop most times. Mine sure did. I, you know, my life stopped for almost a month. I was able to come and go as I pleased. I didn't focus on work. I didn't have to think about work. I just thought about my family and mourning a significant loss in my life. These firefighters, I'll say first responders in general when it happens to police, but these firefighters, it almost as if they take it as a sign of respect for the fallen to make sure they redouble their efforts and do their job even better in the wake of the loss. And it is a difficult thing to think about. And it's something that all of us, I think we need to focus on more, that when that old saying by Kennedy, ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. That sentiment is so, it is such an example of it when we look at the first responders who live by that creed every day. Ask not what your community can do for you, but you can do for your community. And so this is an anniversary that is significant in Arizona, and I think so around the country. And I just wanted to take a few minutes to give you some thoughts of what I'm thinking about today when I think about this, what I remember. I hope you'll take a moment, if maybe tell your kids about it if they don't know the story, so they can understand how significant that sacrifice was. I'll be back tomorrow morning with another show. If you're on Twitter, at Broomhead KTAR, you can reach out to me there. The best way to keep in touch with me are on Instagram, Mike Broomhead, all one word. Back tomorrow morning starting around 8 a.m. for another show. So until then, have a great day. God bless.